As I was watching TV, I watch TV, you know, most days I watch a little bit. At the moment I'm watching a show called Alone. It's pretty entertaining. But, you know, scattered between that, there are a lot of commercials. And most of them are gambling commercials, which is pretty sad. But, you know, there are a few others. And one that I always keep seeing is from the insurance company AAMI, AAMI. And the ad shows a number of different people who've gotten things for very cheap, and it's not worked out so well. And then the ad finishes with this guy in Mini Coupe, which is probably his first problem, but he leaves a smash repair place and heads down a country road that we, you know, have all around us and we see. And as he's driving down the country road, his door falls off. And then his mirror and a few other things. And then finally he's sitting on the side of the road and his wheel just falls off. So he's stuck there in the middle. There's no cars anywhere around. And you know, he gets on the blower, he's on his phone, trying to call someone with, you know, as we know what it's like trying to call insurance companies, he's not getting through anywhere. But then he sees coming down the road, you know, a handful of red motorcycles and a big semi-trailer with AAMI printed on the sign. And with a huge smile on his face, he gives them a wave, but they just fly on by. And the ad ends with the voiceover man saying, "Don't have cheap car insurance regret. Who has value for money and peace of mind? AAMI does." Now, AAMI isn't the only insurance company who works this way, shows you what you're missing out on. Specsavers does it as well. They do it very well with their catchphrase, "Should have gone to Specsavers." And what they're doing is getting you to make a picture in your head of what life would be like and how great life would be if you had their product. They're doing this by giving you an example of what life is like if you went with a different company or something different. Now remember Paul, that he's writing to Timothy so that he's able to help the church in Ephesus know how they ought to behave as the household of God, as the church. And you read that in chapter 3, verse 15. And in our passage today, Paul is pointing out that as the household of God, we need to be an example of Jesus' patience. We need to show people Jesus' patience. And this is done as we talk to people about how Jesus came into our lives. And they see the difference between how Jesus is patient as we come to understand, as compared to how the fallen world is not patient with us when we don't understand a various number of things. Now, coming off our passage that we looked at last week, where Timothy was given the task of charging certain people who teach different doctrine, if you remember, Paul finished off by pointing out that the law is there for all those who live in contrast differently to sound doctrine. And Paul also helpfully explains what he means there by sound doctrine. Sound doctrine is the gospel of the glory of God. That is the good news of being brought back into the right relationship with God. The law is for people who have moved away from grace, from how you get there through Jesus on the cross. Now, from verses 12 to 14 in our passage, Paul tells us that he thanks Jesus that he knows the gospel, that good news of being made right with God. Paul understands that he was no different to anybody else before he knew Jesus. He tells us there that he was a blasphemer, a persecutor, and an insolent opponent. This is a great description of a fallen humanity, humanity that has walked away from God. You know, blaspheme, that means to speak falsely against something. And in this case, it's the fallen humanity speaking falsely against God. You know, Paul was going around saying that saved by grace is not a thing. It can't happen. The only way is to live by the law. You have to follow the law, every single one, perfectly. And when you don't, you have to try and make animal sacrifices to make up for it. Paul, before he met Jesus, preached, you need to be good enough. And that's the line for every religion outside Christianity. You need to be good enough. And in fact, the sad fact is that there are churches around that say that they follow Jesus, but they blaspheme in the same way. They claim to teach grace, but they still give you a list of things that you have to do to be saved. It's very sad that a church that calls themselves Christian do that. But we need to see there, in the second half of verse 14, Paul writes that he received mercy because he was ignorant. He actually didn't know about Jesus. He didn't know what he was talking about. My dad, when he was in his 40s, or maybe a bit older, he decided to play soccer again. It's very entertaining to watch a bunch of men who were once very good at soccer come back and try and play when they're not as fast or as fit as they once were. But in his team, there was this one guy, an Englishman, who was easily the best player on the team. He knew how to push the limits to everything. But occasionally he got pulled up by the referee for doing something wrong, and he had this line. He said, I can't do an English voice, but pretend it's an English voice. He said, "Sorry, sir, I've never played this before. I don't know the rules." Now, that was a blatant lie, but somehow it worked. The guy never got carded. No reds, no yellows, because he didn't know any better. He claimed ignorance, and it worked. But Paul says he was actually ignorant. That is, he didn't understand what was going on through the death of Jesus on the cross. He didn't realize that it was actually God became man. He didn't understand that death covered over sin, making all who believe perfect and holy. That was until Paul came face to face with Jesus himself on the road to Damascus. That is where, as Paul puts it, the grace of our Lord overflowed onto him. And what a great way to put that. It overflowed. Jesus was so full of love and forgiveness and mercy and compassion that it burst out of him and all over Paul. It overflowed. And part of that grace that is shown to Paul and it's also shown to us as well is moving us from being ignorant blasphemers, speaking lies about God and how he saves, into informed followers of Jesus. This is why Paul has been judged faithful. It's not because of anything that he did. If we read the start of Acts, it'll tell us how Paul was going at doing things his own way. But Jesus judged him faithful because Paul moved from not understanding God or not knowing him correctly to living for God and teaching others about Jesus. You know, when Jesus showed him mercy by flooding him, overflowing him with grace. And this is amazing. It's an amazing reality. And like Paul, we have been judged faithful because we have been shown that same mercy. Paul now continues to write to Timothy, telling him that we don't just shelve this salvation. Now that we are saved, we have the salvation. We don't just put it on the shelf, but we need to use it as an example for those who will one day believe. And it's an example of the patience that Jesus shows to sinners, people who are ignorant. Look with me at verses 15 and 16. And these verses show us that there is a real purpose for Jesus being born a man and then dying on the cross. Jesus came into the world to save sinners. Now, there's so much in this little sentence that I reckon I could do a now's lecture just on that sentence. But let me just give you the highlights from it. You see, Jesus came into the world. This points to the fact that his birth in Bethlehem wasn't the beginning for him. Jesus was alive. He was around before them, but he came into. And he came into the world. See, he was outside of the world. outside of the sinfulness and the brokenness, outside of the rebellion of this world that he created. And instead of turning his back on the world, he came into the world. And Jesus came into the world to save who? Or to save sinners. Not the righteous, not those who think that they're good enough or that think that they can be good enough, but he came into the world to save sinners. People who recognize that they have turned away from God and started living their own way without God. Imagine a boat capsizes off the shore and a rescue chopper is sent out, goes and reaches them, finds them, and the divers, they jump into the water and they swim over to the first guy and they tell him, "We're here to save you." And he says, "What are you talking about? We got a boat, I'm just in for a swim, and when I want to, I'll just swim back. It'll be fine." So the divers, they go over to the next person, say, "What about you?" She says, "No, you can save me, please. I know I can't do it myself. I need help." In our passage next week, Paul says that God desires to save all people. But here we see that Jesus, he saves those who recognize they're sinful. He wants all people to be saved, but first people need to recognize their sinfulness. And a quick side note, this is why, even though it is super uncomfortable and awkward, when we share the gospel with people, we need to point out people's sinfulness. They can't come to know forgiveness unless they know what they're being forgiven for. And so those sinners that Jesus has come to save, Paul calls himself the foremost. Now, sometimes the ESV translation, it's a bit wooden. It doesn't flow amazing as English. There are better ones. It is a very good translation. I do really like it. And I especially like it here. I think it nailed this translation where it says, "He's the foremost." Now, Paul, he uses the Greek word protos, which means first. If you win a race, you come protos, you come first. And some translations translate it as Paul is the first sinner, but we know that's not true because that was Adam. Some translations say the worst. The NIV says that he's the worst sinner. And that's a big call, the worst sinner. You know, it was 2,000 years ago. What if it's changed? And if you think about it, maybe it has. Paul never actually killed anyone. He held coats while other people killed them, which is just as bad, I guess. And he imprisoned a lot of people. You see, Paul is putting himself forward as the poster boy for sinners. Paul fits the sinner mold perfectly. You want to know what a sinner looks like? Look at Paul and his life before he met Jesus. Paul lived in complete defiance to God. His whole life was stopping God bringing people back to himself. Paul was actually living for himself and not for God. Paul wanted things to happen his way, how he understood it, and wasn't listening to God. Paul didn't trust in God and what God said he would do through our salvation history. He only trusted in himself and what he could do to get him in heaven. You want to know what a sinner looks like? Look at Paul. That's a sinner, someone who worked opposite to God. And that's who Jesus came to save. Paul knows that the mercy that is shown to him is not just for himself, but it's to be used as an example to show people who will one day believe how patient Jesus is. You know, sometimes I ask myself why people become school teachers. Baffles me, right? In my head, this is something like the pitch meeting for, you know, the high school kids as they're leaving school to become a teachers. "We need you to teach children maths." Okay, do they want to know maths? No, they don't want to know maths. You need to teach them maths against their will. Okay, then who are these children? Just the ones around the building will do, I guess. Oh, okay, that's okay, I can do that. How much do I get paid? We've worked out that probably $10 every 4 years is enough. Well, okay. What if I get good? What if I get really good? What happens? Nothing happens. Nothing at all. But you can tell a teacher who's good compared to one that's not so good. See, the measure of a good teacher is their ability to teach the troubled kids. You want to know if you're getting a good teacher? Look at who they've taught and how they've handled difficult teachers. Paul's conversion really highlights how good Jesus is. He's an example of Jesus' patience. And this doesn't mean how long he took. Jesus waited a long time, although there is an aspect of that. No, patience here is Jesus' forbearance, his tolerance, his restraint and fortitude, his calmness and composure, his even-temperedness and understanding and kindness and consideration as Paul moved from sinner to saint. And it's hard to be all those things. But Jesus was, and you can see that in Paul's conversion. And as Paul came to know the grace that overflowed from Jesus to him. And if Jesus showed all that to Paul, the picture of sinfulness, then he'll do that to all who will come to believe. So just before Paul calls Timothy to be an example of God's grace, of Jesus' patience, he takes a second to let the greatness of God wash over him in verse 17. And this is something we all need to do every now and then. We need to be reminded that we are actually the ones that have turned away from God, who have lived not how God designed us to live. We are the person in the water that didn't realize they needed saving from the shipwreck. Yet God, the only God there is, came into the world to save us. And so like Paul says there, all honor and glory needs to go to God. Whatever we do not for ourselves, but we do it for God. And we do it the way God designed us to do it, so that God's name is able to be known throughout the whole world. Because God is, he's mind-blowing. He's amazing. So we move to verses 18 to 20. And Paul wants Timothy to lead those in Ephesus in being examples of Jesus' patience. Because that is what the household of God ought to be doing. They ought to be an example of Jesus' patience, as well as an example of everything else that God is. And so Paul tells Timothy that by the salvation that he has received through the grace that overflows from Jesus, he is to wage a good warfare. He's to wage a good warfare. Then the phrase wage good warfare that Paul says here, you know, there's a couple of things that encompasses that. You know, first there's the defense. You need to be able to defend your faith. Peter, in one of his letters, writes that we need to be prepared to give an answer for the faith when anyone asks. We need to be ready to defend and say why we believe. It's why the Apostles' Creed is so good to go over and over again. So we know what we believe and can give an answer for it. Second, it's not just defense, but also in the waging of good warfare, we need to attack. We need to go out and introduce people who haven't met Jesus to Jesus. Tell them about how they can come to know about Jesus and what Jesus has done for you as he died on the cross, and how he can do it for them as well. And he will be patient in doing it, even tempered. Then third, we need to be thought out and very strategic in how we go about it. Now there's a big general push that Paul gives Timothy as he plans to wage a good warfare. And you can see it there in verse 19. As you wage a good warfare, you do it holding faith and good conscience. In other words, what Timothy needs to do is to not trust in his own strength. not trust into his own ability to get into heaven. Instead, he needs to keep trusting in the work of Jesus on the cross. A constant reminder is needed. There are people out there who have stopped doing this. They've stopped trusting in Jesus and they've gone back to trusting in themselves, thinking that they're good enough, thinking that they know everything that they need to know, and so are able to live up to God's high standards of perfection. Really, they've gone back to what Paul says he was at the beginning of this passage, a blasphemer. The only difference is that those people who have shipwrecked their faith can no longer claim ignorance. How does Paul describe it there? They've shipwrecked their faith. And Paul finishes by naming two men he had to speak to, he had to remove from the church and had to hand over to Satan. Hymenaeus and Alexander. And look at why he did it. He handed them over to Satan that they may learn not to blaspheme. You know, becoming first chair in an orchestra, if you play the violin, to become first chair, you need to work hard at it. You need to be very dedicated and to practice to get into that position. Now, if someone gets in there and they stop working hard on their skills and being dedicated to practicing more and more, then they'll get dropped. Maybe, probably from the orchestra, not just first position, first chair. And this will hopefully cause them to go back and continue to be working harder, to continue to be dedicated to being a good musician. In the same way, Paul handed these men over to Satan so that they can go back and look again at what Jesus has done for them on the cross. Now, by doing that, they come back to the realization that sinners are saved by Jesus alone and not by things that they do themselves. As the saved people of God, we are destined for heaven, and we don't want to shipwreck that by trusting again in ourselves. So we need to hold to the faith, continually coming back and being reminded again and again and again of where we have come from and where we are going, and that we're getting there only through Jesus because of the grace that overflows from him. And we shouldn't hide our salvation, but we ought to behave in a way that shows the world the patience of Jesus, and that he shows people as they move from sinner to saint. See, in the household of God, people are to be examples of Jesus' patience, pointing to the cross as the only way to be made right with God. And doing this is part of bringing glory to God, just as Paul says in verse 17. We're going to look further at this next week when we look at being the household of God, and that the household of God is to act in a way that brings glory to God. But for now, let's finish in prayer.